Nonprofit governance.
Nonprofit answers.
Nonprofit board.
Nonprofit management.
Nonprofit marketing.
Nonprofit resources.
Welcome to Nonprofit Everything, the podcast where hosts Andy Shurick and Stacy Wedding answer your questions about all things nonprofit.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Everything. I'm Andy Shurick. I'm here with Stacy Wedding, and we're here to answer whatever random nonprofit nonsense you want to throw at us. Send us questions to nonprofiteverything.com, and we will do our best to put those at the top of the queue and get those answered as soon as we possibly can. If we don't know the answer, we will get an expert. Or if we just feel lazy and want to talk to somebody, we'll do that too. We'll get an expert to come in and do our job for us for a little while. I think that's probably why we really get
Woo-hoo!
The experts. questions at nonprofiteverything.com is one way to get that to us. We've also got show notes up on the webpage. So if we're talking about something and we mention something, like say we mentioned something about the 990, we may put a link up there so that you can get more information about what we talked about. There's also a list of topics for all of the questions that we've answered for the last 150 something episodes. So if you are like super curious about exchange transactions, you could type exchange transactions in and it'll bring up all of the episodes where we had a question about exchange transactions. Theoretically, because you're trying to get more sleep and that will help you fall asleep.
I was going to say, so. Andy, who asks a question and types in a search exchange transactions? I don't know if I've ever met, maybe someone like you.
People, insomniacs. I think it's all
okay,
insomniacs.
Okay.
but thanks for sending us questions. We really appreciate it. Keep sending them. And with that, we'll jump right in. Okay, Stacy, here's a long one. So every once in a while, we'll get a question and we've done it already once today, and we say, man, I wish there was more detail in this question. And then someone sends us a question with lots of detail and we're like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of detail. So I'm going to read this one in parts. So it's got actually a main question, some backstory, and then two sub questions. So I'm going to do the main question and the backstory and the first question. And then after we've gone through that one, then I'll throw the second question in. How's that?
Okay.
So I'd love to hear you talk about appropriately and thoughtfully using client success stories in grant writing. I'm concerned that the nonprofit I work for doesn't do a good job communicating with the clients we want to write about, explaining with transparency how we would like to use a story about them, requesting their consent, asking them thoughtful interview questions, having them review and edit copy, etc. I brought up these concerns a little with my supervisors, but they shared that our organization only does release forms with photos, not written stories. As for involving clients in the process, that's not even on their radar. In other words, it seems like our process is just to write about clients and use pseudonyms without involving clients in the process whatsoever. While people at my organization are well-intentioned and wanting to use these stories to help more people, just because we served a client doesn't mean we now own their story to use without asking. This seems to be quite slippery territory to not communicate, not ask for consent, and not involve clients in the process of writing about them. What approach do you suggest for ethically and thoughtfully integrating client success stories?
Ooh. I just want to say thank you to the person who sent this in, because I think it is a topic that has gotten increasingly complex and also that people aren't thinking about it. So I know over the years, we've all seen stories. It's all about the stories. Share a compelling story, right? We've all heard it. It's like number one in all the marketing, all the fundraising, all the grants, try to stick in a story. But what a lot of times we're failing to do as sort of society and as a sector is actually talking about how storytelling can be victimizing or empowering depending on the narrative and the approach we use. And so I think bringing this up is huge, and good for you for talking about it. For some of our listeners who may be going, what exactly can you say more about why this is an issue? And so I'll just share a few examples I've seen. So we've all seen sort of those stories where we overemphasize like the distressing details of someone's situation, right? To a point where it is just like all about, it's not about the human being anymore. It's about this awful dramatic situation. It's like those commercials we see on TV, you know, the, I always joke, the Sarah McLachlan commercial with the, you know, with the dogs that are dying, right? Like it's these just like, oh, like these so like heart-wrenching, very sort of almost manipulative storytelling to really play on people's emotions or their guilt or their fear or all those things. And the reality is sometimes that works, but is that ethical, right? Then you see this sort of counter thing where it's like just summed up super quickly and it really isn't a story at all. You see this in grants all the time, right? Because there's like character limitations where it's like this anonymous description of problems, right? Like Mary, not her real name, came to our program because the blah, 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 right? Like, and it's the super short, like three lines. It really isn't a story if you're really talking about stories, and it actually just... Half the time, these kinds of things perpetuate stereotypes. They lead to exactly what we're trying to do and like we're trying not to do. Like they, you know, they stigmatize an issue further. So thank you. I guess all that to say, I got on my soapbox there, but like, thank you for bringing this up, because I do think we all have to sort of take a moment and think about how are we sharing our stories. And so I think, you know, one way is that, you know, letting anyone know that the person you're sharing the story about is, it's, they're more than their problem. They're more than their circumstances. They're more than their disease or whatever. Like they are more than that, like, right. They're a whole person. And like sharing that and finding a way to share that is important. And I think talking about ways where to your point, asking the person that we want to share their story, I absolutely think that should be a part of it. Like, is it your story of success and all the things you did? And I want to go back to that point in a minute, right? Like all the things you did to move from point A to point B are so inspiring and would help so many others that are in situations like yours. Would you be okay if we shared your story? And would you be okay co-creating or even helping write it for it? Like we want it to be from you. Like we don't want to put words in your mouth. We don't have your same lived experience. So I think really coming at it from a point of asking for permission is important. Making it so that it truly honors that person, and it may not be the sexiest story based on the books of here's what makes a compelling story, but that really kind of stays true and honest to that person's whole self, and just having them play a role in helping create it. Like, I mean, that's empowering in and itself. And you also don't want to like re-traumatize someone, because the reality is they're doing you a favor. If someone says they're willing to share their story, they're doing you a favor, and you have to take that seriously, because sometimes reliving a story, whether it's coming to your gala and being the sad sob story on stage, which we see all the time, right? Again, pulling at heartstrings, or sharing it in writing or doing whatever, someone is reliving a pretty traumatic and painful point in their life. And so making sure, like, we're asking along the way, are you okay? Like, whatever that process looks like, we just want to make sure, like, we're not in a place to re-traumatize you. Like, we want to do that. If you want to share this because you want to help others, great. If at any point this is too much, please tell us and we'll stop and we're not publishing it, right? So, like, having those internal rules, I think, is critical. You know, and always sort of coming back to when we're done with the story, if we helped shape it or if we helped create it, like, if this were my story, would I want it to be shared in the way I've just shared it? So I think things like that along the way are important. The other thing is not making it about your organization being the hero. Oh dear, we need to stop with this, right? Because that's the way sometimes people have been trained in storytelling. Tell the story and share how your organization came in to save the day. Well, Andy, you and I both know that like any single one of us, we can't ever solve anything unless we're willing to take the first step through the door, unless we're willing to sign up for the program, unless we're willing to be an active part of being there as part of it. So like for organizations, when they're like the hero complex about it was all about us, I always say that to me is also sort of this borderline, like avoid that, right? Like we have to start talking about how that own individual's advocacy and willingness to push through, you know, the tough times is critical. Like it was them. They are the hero. They are the hero. Our organization was simply like the conduit, the facilitator of it. We happened to have some supports along the way. We were a partner with them. I mean, like you could be a partner in it, but you're not the like end all be all. And so I think asking some permission, giving someone, letting them put some of it in their own words, giving them opportunities to stop or to elaborate or to not want it published at all is absolutely acceptable and like needs to be part of it. And I know that all of this like takes more time and energy, but it is like when you think about what we're doing with storytelling, it should honor and empower the people. It should support what we're doing with the programs and services. And yet so many times, right, the storytelling becomes almost like the counter to that, like the part that's like, oh, well, yeah, we empowered them and gave them the tools in this area, but now we're just going to exploit them and use their story. Like, it just doesn't make sense, right? Like, and I don't think people do it. I think it's just this sort of programming about we've got to have a good story, and people don't even have lost sight of, like, person involved whose story it is. So that was probably, I feel like I should be like up in a pulpit or something, but I feel strongly as you can tell. And I'm really like kudos to the person who's really thinking about this. So Andy, was I a crazy lady there or what?
No, I totally can't disagree with anything you said. I think thinking back to the stories that, well, so first I think I want to say is that the smartest marketer I ever talked to, like the thing that she used to say all the time was, you are not the target market, right? Which hits home for me. So as a nonprofit executive, especially if you're working in a particular space, you're like in this space all day long, you start to get, number one, jaded to some of the stories. Like you hear these, you know, you've heard the same thing over and over again. Some of your donors may be in the same space that you are, but most of them are probably not. This may be the first time they're thinking deeply about the problem or the you know, what you're doing. And they haven't just been inundated with this day in and day out like you have for the last however many years you've been working with your nonprofit. So having a fresh set of ears come in and tell you, like, you know, these are the stories that are going to become impactful. I mean, I think that's important to think about, that it's not necessarily what you believe. It may be something else might be better. But if you're just, and the reason I say that is if you're making up these stories internally, you're just sort of personally, the organization is curating which one of these stories we think will be most impactful for donors, you may be getting it wrong. And so by having an active, like as the person that answered the question suggests, having an active way to go out and to collect stories from people with the explicit acknowledgement that we would like to tell your story so that we can let people know that this is a challenge and we need more support. Like most people will be like, if it's a good story and you're not going to make me embarrassed, they're going to be perfectly fine saying, yeah, I'm happy to tell you what happened to me and see if this works for you. And as you sort of build up this sort of group of stories, as you learn more and more and more, some of them may pop out. Some of them may be like, this is the most interesting one we've heard, or this is a new angle, or this one works better for this grant or this organization because it talks about something that they're interested in differently than other ones do. I think I'm thinking back for, you know, at the food bank, there were two stories that I think really impacted me. Neither of them were made up and neither of them were solicited. So both of them were somebody just telling us something. And then in one case, we were able to say, that crushed me. Is it okay if we tell your story? Like, is it okay for us to use this? And she said, yes. The other one was actually just a note that we got back. It was a kid that had written, they'd received a backpack of food for the weekend, and they wrote a thank you note back, and they gave it to their school counselor, who then forwarded it to us. And the thank you note said, and I don't remember it exactly, but basically, thank you for the bag of food. I shared it with my two brothers, my sister, and my dog. And this is a bag of food that was supposed to nourish one child for a weekend. And for us, it was like four kids and a pet, like shared what was supposed to be enough calories for one child for the weekend. Like, and the reason that was an impactful story for us is not because not because we thought that this is something we could share with donors that's going to give us more money for the program. It was something that really explained, I think, in really clear ways to me and the people that read the note, like, look at what's actually happening. This is a second grader that has shared their food with their family because everybody in their family is hungry. So why aren't you as generous as the second grader is, right? That's like the kind of thing that, like, for me, it was like, I got to go do harder work now. Yeah. Like, thank you for making me have to do my job harder because now I realize what the stakes are, right? Yeah. So, but that might not necessarily be the kind of story that you're going to share in a particular grant application. It might not hit the same way. So unless you collect a lot of stories and are really like active in collecting as many stories as you can, you won't know which one fits to the right person. You won't know which one fits for the right scenario. So if you're just making it up out of whole cloth, or you think you know better than the clients do about what's happening to them, you're doing it wrong. Which sort of leads me into the second half of the question, which is, do you have any suggestions for how we can express these concerns and advocate for better policies and procedures at my organization? I'm new to both grant writing and this organization, so maybe there's something I'm missing.
I always come at these things from a few angles. One, if I am working in an organization and there's a new employee who comes in, you know, blazing from day one, oh my gosh, this all sucks and we have to change it all, right? Like, it's not going to go well. So I mean, at least for me, like, I'm like, no, you need to learn a little why we're doing what we're doing. So I tend to approach things like this from a standpoint of starting with curiosity, asking questions to understand why we do things the way we do. And sometimes just the questions get people thinking about things they haven't thought about. They just fell into the pattern of we do it like this, just not because they actually really thought about it. So sometimes that can raise good questions and opportunities because they might say, so why are you asking? Then you can kind of elaborate, right? So I think that's one way I would look at approaching it, not knowing all the players and not knowing sort of the history and culture there. But I also think you have an opportunity as someone new to say, hey, because like they've hired you, they believe you're going to, you know what you're doing. And so you have an opportunity to say, you know, I don't know how much you know this, but like there's been a lot of, you know, kind of like an education for people. Like there's been a lot of change out there in the field of storytelling over the years. And I'm wondering if we might want to look at some new approaches to the way we do it. And can I, you know, here's what that might look like. And so instead of just coming with here's the problem or the complaint, like coming at it with also like here's a solution and here's how I'm willing to spearhead or be a huge part of that. Because, right, most people in when they're busy in the work environment are going to be like, great, you're adding more complexity, more work to my like life. You're not making it easier. I mean, let's just be real, right? We're all wearing 100 hats and we're like, great. So like, how do you take away that thought by, and the way you take it away is by sort of volunteering to help create or craft some stuff that might be helpful for the organization, or to say, can I take a lead on this just like as part of what I'm doing, or work with folks to think about this? Like, so I think approaching it like that can really help kind of do it in a safe way where you're not attacking and people don't feel defensive. You've got to be careful because you obviously feel strongly, as do I. And it's important to not come at this like ready to, like with fist raised, right? Like, but to come at this from that approach of like, of curiosity and of more like educational learning. And can we develop something together that might serve? And at the end of the day, making it, I mean, how does anyone argue with, it's not about making your life easier. It's not about making their lives easier. It's about how do we best serve our clients? We're doing such an amazing job with our programs and services. Like imagine if we could do that with our stories as well. Like, so really trying to tie those together, I think that would be really hard for somebody unless they're a total jerk, like, which might make you want to leave the organization if they are. But like, if someone's like, no, we don't want to help empower our clients through their stories, like, oh dear, that's a larger issue. So,
yeah, it sucks to be right sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or you could go with so two randos on a podcast told me you're wrong. That's a good way. That's a good thing to lead with. Yeah, it's hard, especially when you feel like like you're brand new and you don't feel like you've got a lot of authority to make changes. And like Stacy said, if you walk in with, this is all broken and all wrong, why are you guys so terrible, right? That's not going to go well for you. On the other hand, you have a pretty good point. I mean, it's going to be, like Stacy said, it's going to be really hard to argue with, why don't we collect more stories? And wouldn't it be great if we actually got people to like acknowledge that we could use them, right? And then make sure, and just to see if they're comfortable with us using the stories. Wouldn't that be a good idea, right? And it's like Stacy said, it's going to be really hard for someone to say, nah, I think that's a waste of time, right? And again, if they do, just like Stacy said, that's a red flag. Like you got to want, this is the kind of relationship red flag. You're like, do I want to date this person? I don't think so. Maybe it's time to look for a different grant writer jobs because there's lots of grant writer jobs. So good luck. Thanks again for asking the question. Yes. It was a really interesting one.
Thank you.
I saw a job announcement that was recently posted for a position that I'm really interested in and that I would rock. Unfortunately, the requirements for the job are completely unreasonable, requiring external certifications and years of experience that probably only apply to two people in the whole country. By the way, I'm in Canada. Any tips on how to break through?
Hello, listener from Canada. We love our international listeners, so thank you for...
Did you know we're a top 10 nonprofit podcast in Canada for some completely inexplicable reason?
Really?
We've got a lot of Canadian listeners for some reason that I do not understand, but we love you anyway.
We love you. Keep listening and please tell us what you're doing, like why we can't get that same traction in the United States or in any other country for that matter. So, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Canada. I really pondered this question because I know how frustrating it can feel when you're like, give me a break. Like, do you really need, that's like a superhero that doesn't exist of what you're asking for, right? And you don't know enough, you know, you may not know enough about their own background or who wrote the job description or all the reasons why it's got all those requirements. I mean, I always wonder if there's more to it than maybe meets the eye, which could be why they have all those requirements that may not seem obvious to you, but there may be good reason for why they're including it. But to answer your question, I guess what I'm thinking is, I were in your shoes, I would probably write, if there was the opportunity allowed me to write a cover letter, I would probably write a cover letter that really addressed the fact that while I recognize I don't have some of the credentials you outlined, because they're going to notice it anyway. So it's not that there's a problem, like just being honest, because then that shows you actually weren't a complete slouch and just ignored that. Like you're acknowledging it, right? Like, hey, I saw that you have all these credentials. Here's the reality. I don't have those, but here's what I do have that I think could incredibly benefit your organization and why I think I would be a great fit to rock this, right? You obviously feel really confident. So can you find a way to share some of your background? They clearly want someone with a track record, which is why they're like, okay, we want, you know, people with years of experience and external certifications. To me, that signifies an employer looking for like someone that's got some best practice knowledge and someone who has been around and like has a track record of success. And so to me, I would use that lens in my cover letter. Like, hey, here's what I have accomplished in other jobs. Here's what I think I could accomplish for you. I am willing and open to take any certifications that you think are necessary, but I think I also want to just give a shout out to myself. I mean, obviously in different words, right? But give credit to what I have accomplished that I think could help you. And it is all about, if there's that balance of not wanting to be too egotistical, like I'm amazing and I would rock this, because that's annoying too. But sort of from a perspective of, I'm so passionate about this and deeply want this. And here's why I want it. And here's why I think I would be a good fit. So I would probably go at it from that angle. Or I would see, I'm sure you've already thought of this and probably probably it doesn't exist, but do you know of anybody who works there? Is there anyone who could, like, you know, put in a good word for you, or give you some backstory on how best to approach this? But I'm assuming that's not an option, or you wouldn't be asking us the question. So that's the way I'd handle it. How about you, Andy?
I'm not so sure that that this person wouldn't necessarily have thought of that first. So many people, the way a lot of job things work right now is that there's a first layer, because we've got the internet now, there's this new thing called the internet. And when you post a job, it ends up on the internet, which means you have an absurd number of applications come through. Like a lot. It used to be, you know, back in the day when you'd like publish it in the newspaper and you'd get like 9, and they'd be like, okay, we got to find from these 9 people. And now it's like 9,000. And so even nonprofits, which don't have really sophisticated HR departments with levels of recruiters that are working on certain industries and all this kind of stuff, they don't have it, but they still get that volume of information back. So if you post something, especially if it's a higher level position that might have something like this, you're going to get a lot of applications. And so you need some sort of automated way to sift the good from the bad, or the ones that meet the requirements from the ones that don't meet the requirements. So even a cover letter in this scenario, I think, as much as like if it were back in the newspaper day, like a cover letter would be great because somebody's going to read it. Nobody's going to read the cover letter. They're going to put it in the automated system. The automated system's going to say, oh, this person doesn't have this certification. So they go in the no pile instead of in the yes pile. And so you never see it, that even though you have the greatest qualifications in the world and you're going to be the best person for the job, nobody's ever going to look at you. So in the scenarios where, like, and don't do this for every job. If you're just like shotgun applying for this, this is not going to work for you. But if this really is a job that you're really interested in and that you think you're going to do an amazing job at, do all of the work that's required to make sure that your resume or your cover letter and your CV or whatever goes around that first step and doesn't go through the automated system, doesn't go through the HR person whose job it is to sort. Make sure you've gotten around them somehow. And there's lots of different ways to do that. So the one that Stacey first mentioned is figure out how you know someone who knows someone who knows someone in that organization that can get that resume put on top of the pile, or even just in the yes pile, like in the we need to look at this person further pile. So with something like LinkedIn, like you can look on something like LinkedIn and go, oh, like I know this person and they work in the same company as a board member. So do I know that person well enough to be able to call them and say, look, there's this job. I mean, we've been friends for 12 minutes. So like, we know each other on LinkedIn. Would you mind talking to this? And lots of people will, like, if you're not a crazy person, lots of people go, yeah, sure. I'm happy to do that. And just to let you know, if you've never been in the position of an executive at a nonprofit, like, when a board member hands you a resume and says, I got this resume, right? Even if they don't say anything else, if they just say, this resume came in from this board member, it goes in the look at this person pile automatically. It doesn't go into the trash pile immediately. It goes in the we need to look at this because a board member handed this to me pile. And if you can make, that's when your cover letter is going to make a difference. That's when all of those other things are going to make a difference. If the executive director has an assistant, get the assistant to put your resume on the executive director's desk. Figure out a way to get to the assistant. That's another way to do it. If you know anybody that works there, just try to get some into the organization to get on the other side of that pile. Call in favors. Like if you know somebody and you're like, can you introduce me to this person who happens to be a board member? I'm really interested in this job and I don't want to waste their time. But I just have a feeling if I can just get to the interview stage, I can close this. And I would love for your help on this one, which is why you can't do it for every job. You can only do it for the jobs that you're really, really interested in. Then you have the time to make a compelling case about why them asking for 25 years of experience is crazy town, because it means they can't afford any of those people and nobody's going to work there anyway. And what you really want is me, because I come with all these other things that you didn't even put in the job description. So if it's a job you really, really want, and, you know, I feel bad because it's a question asked to the podcast, which means by the time we get the answer back, it may be too late. But if it's a job you really, really want, like, do your best to make some of those human connections to try to get your resume to the top of the pile, because the HR drone or the computer system that's sorting resumes to begin with, they're not going to work out for you.
And I think that's all assuming that they've got, I mean, I've worked with a lot of different sized organizations. Smaller organizations don't usually have those automated systems where it automatically gets booted, and some do. So not knowing the size of the organization you're looking to work for or any of that, right? So keeping in mind that all of this could depend. I mean, sometimes you will have a real live person who's looking at cover letters or resumes, and sometimes it will be automated. So, and just boot, oh, didn't meet these requirements. So, but I do, I think there's benefit regardless of whether it's this position or not, benefit of establishing a relationship in the organization, particularly because you never know if there's other positions that might come around like down the road that you also think you could be a good fit for. So it's not like a waste of time to start trying to make those connections now, even if it isn't, even if like you hear this podcast and we're past, like they've already hired someone by the time you hear it, right? Because I think there is always that option. And I also think that, you know, it could be really, you never know if they are looking for somebody with all the crazy, like you said, there's probably only two people in the, you know, that could qualify for something like this. Most likely you might see another posting that comes out a month or two later that's like much different because they realize they got no candidates because their requirements are too stringent or whatever the case is. So I think definitely the connection angle feels like the most viable, and let us know how it goes. I'll be curious to know what approach you use, and wouldn't it be super cool if you got it? So I'm going to think positively for you.
Absolutely. If I can just add on to the back of it, if you are in the position of hiring somebody, don't do this. Like, don't add additional requirements when they're not necessary just because you're using it to whittle down the pool. Do the work to look at the actual resumes that come in and find some way to sort them into piles that doesn't have like just an arbitrary binary condition between yes and no. Like, you're never going to find the best person by who can game the system the best or who spent the most time doing this job someplace else. That's probably not going to be the best person for you. So don't be lazy about it. If you truly want to hire, like, open the gates as wide as you can and then be thoughtful about who you're going to bring on board. That's like, it seems so basic, but so many times you see, like, as soon as somebody's like, 'cause we've got to put this job description together for this new thing and we need a master's degree. Like, why? Like, tell me what the master's degree is going to give you. Like, are you hiring like somebody that needs to be an RN? Are you hiring a nurse that needs a nursing degree and has to be certified as a nurse? Otherwise, like, why not just open it to the world? Right. Like, there's no reason to make it arbitrary.
Yeah.
So please, please do that.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Nonprofit Everything. It is always a fun journey, and it's one that I'm super grateful for because I get to hang out with my co-host, Andy, and I also get to learn a lot from you and your questions and from Andy. It's always enlightening and interesting seeing what questions are on your mind and what you're looking for from us. And we do our best to answer. And when we can't, we bring in a guest expert. And with all of that, the kind of theme of it is learning, right? Like, lifelong learning. And this podcast hopefully is one of those tools for you, like it is for me, to do that. Because even as the co-host who sounds sometimes like I have all the answers, trust me, I do research and behind the scenes stuff to make sure I am sharing with you things that I think are obviously accurate, but also not allow myself to get off on too many tangents. We all know, like, I think one of these episodes, you're going to hear me go off on a couple tangents and soapboxes. So my apologies, but I guess that's the power of having the mic in front of me.
I think that sounds like a challenge. I think somebody should carefully craft a question that will make Stacy answer for an entire 30-minute episode.
Oh, so, my goodness.
So this is your challenge. What question can we ask Stacy that we'll just have her go off for 30 full minutes? I think that would be really interesting.
Oh, dear. I'm sort of scared to hear what we get, Andy. But we've done interesting challenges before, so we'll see what comes up. Anyway, if you have any questions, you know where to find us, nonprofiteverything.com, questions@nonprofiteverything.com email address, or on, you know, social channels, Discord, all of the ways, right, to stay in touch and communicate. And even more importantly, your ratings, your reviews of us and this podcast actually help. Hopefully they help, right? If they really suck as reviews, we probably go down in the rankings, but I don't know how all that stuff works. But if you're giving us a positive review, I think that's amazing because it helps others find us. And we are always looking to grow our audience and help more people. So we know you have similar hearts as we do. And we would so greatly appreciate your rating or review if you enjoyed today's episode or any episode. So thanks so much. And we'll see you next time.